And we are on air at Bamfa Racing Radio. This is Thursday night, October the 13th, and we're doing our Las Vegas NASCAR weekend preview with Hot Topic Sound Off. Now, in our first half hour, we will have some short track news and upcoming races. We'll also preview the ARCA West Series at the Las Vegas Bullring, taking place tomorrow night. And then we have the media interview with the ARCA Menards Series West driver Sarah Burgess, the number 97 eBay Motorsports Chevrolet, and Bridget Burgess, her daughter, driving the number 88 HMH Construction Chevrolet. Afterward, we have another media interview with the 2022 ARCA Menards Series champion, Nick Sanchez, driving the number 2 Rev Racing Chevrolet, and we'll follow that up with an update from the NASCAR Truck Series. We're going to close out our preview segment with the NASCAR Xfinity and Cup Series playoff races at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And then, of course, at 10 o'clock, we have our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off, and that's a discussion with our Bamfa Racing crew. Joining me for tonight's show is our co-host for tonight, and that is Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. I hope you got a much better view there in Las Vegas than I have here in my living room.
Well, I'm not in Las Vegas yet. We're still on the way, but looking forward to getting there sometime tomorrow.
Oh, I thought you were already there. I didn't realize that. You said you were staying in a hotel. I thought it was already there. So, well, you just dream about it then.
I will be. No doubt about it. Okay, let's go ahead and start with some short track racing news from Racing America and Flow Racing. Corey Heim has his sights set on the elusive Winchester rifle this weekend in the big super late model race that's taking place this Sunday, the Winchester 400. So Corey Heim hoping to bring home that rifle.
Well, and this is one that is a coveted trophy for sure, but there's a reason. I know there's another article up talking about the entry list and some former winners on that list, as well as some other superstars of racing. So it's going to be tough. I know the year I went, he had a good run, but that is some tough competition coming to Nashville.
There is. Also, there was an announcement made a couple of days ago, the Snowball Derby Rookie of the Year will earn a $10,000 bonus. So that's kind of cool. That'll happen out at Five Flag Speedway in the running of the Snowball Derby, the prestigious race that draws in people from everywhere, all across the country.
It does. I know Sal talks a lot about several of the ones from California, and I know I don't know if he's made everyone, but he goes fairly regularly. Got to meet him there. That's where I actually got to meet Sal, other than just talking to him here on the show. Such a huge event, and this just adds to that prestige of why drivers want to be there. I mean, just as a rookie, you can earn now $10,000 as the rookie of the race.
Exactly. Some former Snowball Derby Rookies of the Year include drivers like Darrell Waltrip, who was the Rookie of the Year in 1972, Harry Gant in 1976, Dick Trickle in 1979, Tim Bryant, he's the track guy at Five Flag Speedway in 1982, Larry Raines in 1985. I'm just touching on a few of them here. Jason Keller in 1991. Marty Lindley, one of the crew chiefs now, in 1996. Clay Rogers from Martinsville. No, wait a second. I don't think he's from Martinsville. I'm thinking of somebody else. But that's 2000. Kevin Sawinski from 2003. Let's see here. Chase Elliott in 2009, Eric Jones in 2012, Dalton Sargeant in 2014. If you follow Bamfa Racing Radio, you know that we've talked with Dalton on several occasions. In 2015, it was Zane Smith. In 2016, it was Chandler Smith. Chase Purdy won it in 17, Tyler Ankrum in 18, Travis Brayden in 19, Daniel Dye in 2020, and in 2021, it was Sammy Smith, if that gives you a feel for what it means to be a Rookie of the Year in the Snowball Derby.
Well, and just taking that one race, the names you feed, either what they have accomplished in NASCAR or what some of these drivers are building towards and where they're at now in their careers and still climbing the ladder. Names you're mm-hmm. very familiar, obviously, Zane and Chandler Smith, Sammy Smith. Apparently Smith is a popular one. Maybe your name has to be Smith.
Well, hopefully not. We'll have to see what happens this year for the Snowball Derby. Those races typically take place the first week of December. I'm looking to see if they've got a date here for that race. I don't see one, but look for it sometime during that first week in December. Always a very entertaining race. One that
yeah,
I look
forward
to every single year.
Most certainly. I know I think that normally around the 8th, between the 8th or earlier in the month there in December. I don't have this year's date listed either.
Okay. There's also an interesting article here about the Cup drivers say short tracks road course packages need work. The next-gen car has made intermediate tracks better at the expense of the one-lane venues. So if you'd like to know what drivers are feeling about that next-gen car, this is a great article to check out, written by Matt Weaver over at Racing America.
Speaking of the Snowball Derby, there's another place where I got to meet Matt Weaver. I had some great conversations with him throughout the weekend. And this one's interesting because early in the year, and this car, they said, was kind of more designed for road course racing with the way it was set up and balanced. Beginning of the year, mm-hmm. we saw first-time winners, thought it was a great thing. Now that attitude is kind of changing. So I'm not sure what the issue is there. I know we've covered a couple of these portions in Hot Topics in Meso more tonight, but it seems like maybe it's kind of swaying that they've figured out how to make it run on the mile and a half and now are a little behind on the road courses and short tracks. So we'll see where that leads into the finish of the year and then next year as they make some changes.
Exactly. There's also a lot of replays there if you want to catch up on some NASCAR racing or short track racing. And then over at Flow Racing, they've got the Dirt Track World Championship, has rich history and a big check. So that is going to be one to watch this week as well. But it gives you some of the background of this race.
Well, and I find that interesting. I know that had always been held at the Charlotte Dirt Track there right outside of Charlotte Motor Speedway. I actually know several of my neighbors that drive super late models, one of them being Brian Rickman, our Comp Cam super late model champion this year, that have been to that race. I mean, they're, again, local drivers building cars in their backyards. That's one event they just, whatever they mm-hmm. can do to get to that race at least one time.
Exactly. Also, 38 strong for the USAC Silver Crowns Bettenhouse 100 out in Springfield, Illinois. So that's a pretty cool race as well.
And these, I think, are going to get even more interesting as we wind down with some of the other series. We know we have several champions already crowned, a couple more to go, especially the NASCAR's top three. But throughout what they call the off-season, you're going to see these driver names. I know Chase Elliott, Chris Bell, Kyle Larson. I think Kyle did some in Australia, actually, but the Chili Bowl come up in January. You're going to see these drivers. That's how they stay sharp through what we call the off-season, joining more of these events that host during the winter months.
Exactly. And we've said it before, we're going to say it again. There is no lack of racing off the short tracks, either from Racing America or Flow Racing. If you want to see a replay of any of the races that took place this past weekend, all you have to do is head over to either racingamerica.com or flowracing.com. If you're a subscriber, you'll be able to watch those races. And then also check out the new races that are coming up this weekend. There is a slew of races that are coming up this weekend. So including the Arkham and Art Series West at the Bullring in Las Vegas.
Another one, Sharon, I can't tell you how jealous I am. I know we talked about this the other night. That is great. You get to go to Las Vegas for this event.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So I've always heard so much about the Bullring at Las Vegas and Las Vegas Motor Speedway, a 1.5-mile track. It's going to be interesting to see how that next-gen car races on that 1.5-mile track out of Las Vegas this weekend.
It certainly will be.
But there is so much more. And like I say, they have a schedule over at Flow Racing. They have a schedule over at Racing America. There is no shortage of races. And if you missed a previous race, the replays are there. So add them to your calendar and check them out.
I know we're coming up to move on here, but also the CRA Late Model Sportsman 2022 Championship, that'll be decided at Winchester. And this is the last month for the Alan Kowicki DDP program. I was trying to find that article. I think that one's on Racing America. There you go. They're at the Kowicki DDP Driver Development Program enters its final month of competition with Dylan Zampa leading right now.
Yes, and we've talked to Dylan several times about his relationship with the Kowicki Driver Development Program. He's a very strong supporter of that program and a recipient of that program. So it's really cool to see what he's doing with that kind of support from the Kowicki Driver Development Program. And again, this is the final month of competition, and I can't wait to see how it all ends out. They've also got that entry list for the Winchester 400, if you're wondering who are the drivers that are going to be in that race. We mentioned Corey Heim earlier, but there's a whole slew of other drivers that are going to be racing, including Carson Hocevar, Chandler Smith, Jesse Love, Sammy Smith, Casey Roderick, Jake Garcia, Stephen Nassi, Logan Bearden, Brandon Barney, Corey Heim, Kyle Crump. There's just a slew of talented race car drivers that are racing that Winchester 400 this weekend, and that's out at Winchester Speedway. If you can get out there and check out that race, it is going to be well worth your time. All right. Are you back with me, Jay?
I am. We were concerned as far as you having connectivity issues from the hotel. Apparently mine here at the house is the one being bucky.
Oh, no. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the Arca Menard Series racing at the Bullring at Las Vegas Motor Speedway this Friday, tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Pacific, 7:15 Pacific time, 10:15 Eastern time. It will be available via Flow Racing for live streaming, and radio coverage is available at arcaracing.com. Now, it is a 3/8 mile paved oval, and they'll be racing a total of 150 laps. On Friday, they'll have practice and qualifying from 2:15 to 3:45 p.m., and the Star Nursery 150, all 150 laps over 56.25 miles, will take place at 7:15 p.m. Pacific time. So, again, this is the penultimate race, the final race before they have their season finale out at Phoenix Raceway early in November. So this is a do-not-miss event.
Know a couple of drivers that have come out of there. We talk about the Busch brothers, Kurt and Kyle Busch, Noah Gregson, Haley Deegan. And one note here, I see Takuma Koga going to make his 100th West Series start there tomorrow night. But that's not the only history we got going on.
No, it's not. Let me take a look here. I'm kind of going through my notes here. Okay, I'm not sure where you're at there, Jay.
I was leading into, I know we were going to talk about the history making of our guests, or the audio guests we got tonight.
Oh, yes, yes. We do have the audio guest coming up with Sarah and Bridget Burgess. It's the first mother-daughter team that is racing in the same race. And there's a media interview that took place this week, and we will play that for you tonight here at Bamber Racing Radio. But this race is actually the 10th event on the West Series schedule and will be the 11th visit by the series to that 3/8-mile paved oval. Jake Drew has a comfortable 51-point lead in the West Series point standings, and he'll look to add to his advantage as he pursues his fifth victory of the season with Sunrise Racing.
Now, West Series made its first visit to the Bullring in 1994 when it was NASCAR Hall of Famer Ron Hornaday Jr. triumphed in a 200-lap event. Other drivers to secure visits to Victory Lane at the short track over the years since include Ernie Cope, Mark Reed, Austin Cameron, Jim Englebright, Greg Pursley, Sam Mayer, Gracie Trotter, and Taylor Gray.
That's right. And while the racing season for the ARCA Menards Series and the ARCA East have come to a close, the ARCA Menards Series West, as I mentioned earlier, still has a couple of races, including the Bullring at Las Vegas. And they have their championship leader will look to continue a strong season in front of the West Series field. Drew's teammate, Tanner Reif, will be chasing his third victory of the season after securing wins at Irwindale and Evergreen Speedway earlier this year.
And Cole Moore, he's fresh off his first West Series victory at All-American Speedway back on October 1st. He'll look to carry his momentum into Friday night's event in Las Vegas. And his Bill McAnally Racing teammate, Landon Lewis, he's also looking for his second victory of the 2022 season. Now, elsewhere in the field, going to be made here when Bridget Burgess races against her mother, Sarah Burgess, who's making her West Series debut on Friday. We'll cover this a little bit more and with the audio, but it'll be the first time in ARCA or NASCAR history a mother and daughter will race against each other in the same event.
Okay, there's also several other drivers making their West Series debuts on Friday. They include Tyler Reif, the brother of the aforementioned Tanner Reif, who will be driving the number 41 for team owner Chris Loudon, Madera Speedway late model competitor Jacob Smith, who is also making his series debut aboard the number 5 Ford, fielded by team owner Jerry Pitts.
And Katie Heidinger, who recently announced as part of the Advanced Auto Parts Drive for Diversity Combine, she's slated for her West Series debut in the number 02 Chevrolet for Young Motorsports. Mexico's Andres Perez de Lara, another Drive for Diversity Combine invitee, makes his West Series debut in the number 54 for David Gilliland Racing.
So excited for Katie Heidinger and Andres Perez de Lara. It's going to be fun to watch them. Taylor Gray, who won the West Series opener earlier this year at Phoenix Raceway, he's returning to West Series competition in the number 71 Ford for David Gilliland Racing. Gray is the most recent West Series winner at the Bullring at Las Vegas, and he's going to look to become just the second multi-time race winner in West Series history at the track. So watch that name. Watch that driver, Taylor Gray.
And some other notables, I mentioned Takuma Koga making his 100th West Series start on Friday, as well as Buddy Shepard, Todd Souza, and RJ Smotherman, among some others here that we'll cover on the full entry list.
Okay, and speaking of that, let's go ahead and cover the full entry list now. We'll go from the bottom up.
All right.
I'll go ahead and start with David Smith in the number 05. He hails from Sydney, British Columbia, driving the Shockwave Marine Suspension Seating Toyota for his own race team, and David Fugate will be on top of the pit box. Then there's the number two we mentioned earlier, Katie Hettinger from Dryden, Michigan, driving the Chevrolet Performance Chevrolet for Tyler Young, and Andrew Abbott is on top of the pit box.
In the number 99, that's a Bill McAnally Chevrolet. Mario Isola will be coaching driver Cole Moore. Moore comes out of Orangevale, California, with the Beep Industries JM Environmental sponsor. And then with eBay Motors as a sponsor, Sarah Burgess comes out of Brisbane, Australia, and being the number 97 family-owned Chevrolet, Victor Frankel, the crew chief there.
Victor Frankel is actually going to be the crew chief for Bridget Burgess as well, in the number 88 HMH Construction Chevrolet, and that's a team owned by Sarah Burgess. Also, Vince Little from Madera, California, is driving the True Quality Construction Daryl Herzog Roofing Chevrolet, the number 85. He'll be the owner. Daryl Herzog is the crew chief.
Number 84, Mike Nocke Ford, a usual competitor. This time behind the wheel, though, is going to be Bradley Erickson out of Phoenix, Arizona, bringing the LS Framing Fastline Motorsports Ford along with Tony Caputo. And then Dave McKenzie coaching Nick Johannes. The number 77, Jams Towing King Taco Toyota of Joe Nava comes out of Northridge, California.
Yeah, Nick Johannes. Also, Taylor Gray, we mentioned it before, our driver to watch this weekend in the number 71 from Mooresville, North Carolina for DGR. That's David Gilliland Racing Ford. And Chad Johnston will be on top of his pit box. Roxy Gabbard will be on top of the pit box for the number 66, driven by Eric Reed from Bountiful, Utah. He's driving for Al Jones Racing in their Chevrolet this weekend.
Coming from the west out of Madero, California, though, is Joey East in another Mike Nocke Ford. This one being crew chief by Mike Nocke himself on that Richwood Meets Balzillo Farms machine, number 54. And then in the 51 out of Mexico City, Mexico, is Andre Perez de Lara driving for Johnny Gray in a Ford. Derek Smith is the crew chief of that Imperium Constar Latham Tekel car.
And the number 42 is Amber Slagle from Sylvan Lake, Michigan, driving the MMI Sunwest Construction Toyota for owner Bruce Cook. And Derek Peebles will be on top of the pit box. It'll be Tony Jackson on top of the pit box for the Chris Loudon-owned Ford, driven by Tyler Wrights at number 41. He hails from Henderson, Nevada. He'll be driving the Power Gen Components Stoney Ford for Chris Loudon.
Kenesha Tuttle will be crew chief, and Andrew Tuttle in his cell phone number 39, sponsored by Gearhead Coffee. And that Chevrolet comes out of Caldwell, Idaho, and then out of Pahrump, Nevada. There's R.J. Smotherman in the number 21 John Wood-owned Chevrolet. It's going to be Matt Jackson on the crew chief for the Wolfenstein Construction and Stonies.
And it's Buddy Shepard, a local favorite from Bakersfield, California, driving the number 17 MMI H&M Body Work and Towing Toyota for Steve McGowan. Sean Samuels will be on top of the pit box. Charlie Wilson is on top of the Bill McAnally-owned Chevrolet, driven by Landon Lewis, the number 16 Napa Auto Parts. Is his sponsor. He hails from Ocean Isle Beach, North Carolina.
Series regular, the number 13 is Todd Souza, comes out of Romas, California, brings along Central Coast Cabinets to the Kelly Souza-owned Toyota. Michael Munoz is calling the shots there. And Jerry Pitts, another one, crew chief. He'll be with the Kyle Keller, number 12, LVMPD Foundation, the Eros Environmental Battleborn Ford, owned by Steve Bohan, comes out of Las Vegas, Nevada.
Bohannon. Okay, Chris Loudon, he's going to be driving as well as crew chiefing. Chris Loudon will be behind the wheel of the number 11. He hails from Las Vegas, Nevada. He'll be driving the Blue Valor Whiskey Stony Chevrolet for John Wood, Dave Jackson on top of the pit box, and then it'll be Jeff Schrader on top of the bill, on top of the pit box for the Bob Brancati Ford, driven by Tanner Reif, the number 9, Vegas Fastener Manufacturing. Again, Tanner hails from Henderson, Nevada, just like his brother.
With the home tone of Nagoya Hichi, Japan, is Takuma Koga in the number 7 Loop Connect Toyota, owned by Jerry Pitts. The crew chief here, though, is going to be Denny Moyer. And then Bill Sedgwick, a familiar name, calling the shots for the Brancati number 6 Ford of Jake Drew. Drew comes out of Fullerton, California, is in the Sunrise Racing Molecular Group A machine.
All right. Also, Jacob Smith from Eagle, Idaho, is driving the number 5 Collective Region Ford for Jerry Pitts. They don't have a crew chief listed for him, but you never know. I guess we'll find out tomorrow night. And also driving the number 4 is Sean Hingarani from Newport Beach, California, driving the Fidelity Capital Nascimento Joyner Motorsports Toyota. For Nascimento Motorsports, Ty Joyner is his crew chief. And
well, that's a big event.
The entry list.
Yeah, I think I counted 26 drivers there that we just covered. So big event for the West Series right there with the Xfinity and Cup Series at Las Vegas.
That's a lot of cars on that three-eighths of a mile track. It's going to be a lot of bumping and banging, I think.
That's why they call it a bull ring.
Exactly. Okay, now the broadcast schedule is available at arcaracing.com. If you'd like to check that out, they have several articles over there, a couple about featuring Sammy Smith. He takes the Sioux Chief Showdown champion, the ARCA Menards Series East Championship. He's just been on a roll this year. Daniel Dye. He actually locked up the 2022 CGS Imaging 4 Crown Champion. Chip, you can read about that. Nick Sanchez secured the ARCA Menards Series Championship at Toledo last weekend. We're going to have some audio from him tonight. Again, it's the media interview with him after winning that championship. And you can watch Friday night's race from the Las Vegas Bullring live on Flow Racing. There's also tickets still available for the Star Nursery 150 at the Bullring in Las Vegas. And they also have some behind the scenes, everything you need to know about the Bullring in Las Vegas. So a lot of great articles there, and do not miss.
Well, I'll have to pick it up on one of those platforms you mentioned there, as I won't be able to get out there by tomorrow night.
Yeah, that might be difficult. Yes. Okay, just want to let you know that we are going to play the audio interview with Sarah Burgess and Bridget Burgess. Again, they're making history this weekend out at Las Vegas in the ARCA West as the first mother-daughter pair to race together in the same track in that Star Nursery 150 this Friday night out at the Las Vegas Bullring. So with that, let me see if I've got some more. Okay, Sarah Burgess, she's the driver of the number 97 eBay Motorsports Chevrolet. She's the mom of Bridget. She's also the team owner of BMI Racing. She normally serves as a crew chief for Bridget's number 88 ARCA Menards Series West entry, and she's making her West Series debut at the Bullring this weekend. She's also the senior business developer and partnership manager for eBay Motors. Bridget is the driver of the number 88 HMH Construction Chevrolet SS. She has 4 top 10 finishes so far this season. Again, Sarah and Bridget are both natives of Brisbane, Australia. They moved to the United States in 2008 in hopes of getting involved with motorsports, which then became a passion for Bridget as well. Now, Sarah's racing background is actually in drifting and pro light trucks. She raced the number 97 in trucks as well. BMI Racing is a small family-run team based out of Tulare, Utah, outside of Salt Lake City. And Sarah's husband and Bridget's dad, Adam, normally serves as Bridget's spotter, but will be the eyes in the sky for Sarah this weekend out at Las Vegas. So with that, let's go ahead and listen. We're going to listen to maybe about 5 minutes, and then Jay and I will comment afterwards.
All right, everyone. As you know, we are joined by Sarah Burgess, driver of the number 97, eBay Motors Chevrolet, and Bridget Burgess, driver of the number 88, HMH Construction Chevrolet in the Arca Menards Series West. They will be making history this weekend at the Bullring at Las Vegas Motor Speedway when they become the first mother-daughter pair in a NASCAR or an ARCA-sanctioned event to race against each other. So we're just going to start off quickly here with Sarah. Sarah, can you just give us a little bit of background as to how this idea came together and what it took to put it together?
Oh, my gosh. The idea sort of came to fruition the end of last year, going through a full season with Bridget's new car, and running it through and kind of like, this is really cool. I'd love to actually give it a go at some point as well, probably help on the feedback from Bridget to understand the car a bit more, and then it just turned into how amazing would it be to then actually just race against each other. And so that was, sort of as we wrapped up the season last year and then how we started to look at the season for this year and adding a second car for a backup for Bridget. And then that's when it was really like, oh, wow, like we need to, try and make this happen to have a mother-daughter opportunity and race asphalt together. It would be such a great experience.
Awesome. And then Bridget, your mom is usually atop the pit box for you when you're racing. What is it going to be like to be competing against her and having her as a teammate this weekend?
I think it'll be fun. My mom and I, we each race each other in off-road, so I think it's just going to bring out that extra competitiveness from my mom, I think. So I think it'll be interesting, but really fun, and I'm really excited for it.
Awesome. We're going to open up to questions. If you have a question, please go in and raise your hand under the reactions. I see Mike Embry has his hand up. So, Mike, we'll go ahead and start with you.
Morning, ladies.
Good morning, Mike.
Sarah, tell me why this particular week, this particular track to do this?
We, in terms of the actual track selection, we did have two possibilities. It was Irwindale for the July race was one of the first options. And then the next one being this race at the Vegas track. There's a couple of different aspects to it in just terms of the demands and what we go through for each type of race. Going to a road course track is, I'll be honest in saying I don't have the road course experience compared to Bridget. She's been phenomenal on a road course. And then just the resources from a team perspective and personnel. Going to Irwindale is a great local track that we've been to and it would have been a great option. But also the same for Vegas as well. It's just a little bit less on the demand for what we need to do. And the great thing about this Vegas race is that it's a straight through race where we don't have any stops for fuel or tires. So it does simplify that opportunity. The Las Vegas Bullring on a NASCAR Cup weekend really ties it all in nicely together. So, I know that there's a lot of attention going around the Cup Series right now, and for us to be a part of the giant big story is pretty exciting.
Is there some kind of wager on who finishes best?
It is definitely the most common question. I have been asked, am I going out there just to circulate? And it's like, no, I'm going out there to be competitive. It's just my nature. We keep sort of who's going to win? I want to see Bridget do well in the race just from a championship point standpoint. She's doing well this year. She's 17 points. But at the same time, I do want to do a really good job. So, but Bridget's definitely got a better car. What do you think?
I think it'll be really tough because we're obviously in a race each other recently, but it's obviously when it comes back to the last five laps, we're two race cars out there. So it's when we race off road, it was a similar situation where, yes, we're teammates and we race each other cleanly, but when it came down to the last few laps. We were just really rough with each other at that. And, I mean, it makes it exciting. That's, you know, that's what's everything about. We get rough with each other, and, you know, it's just, like, down to the last lap. So.
Okay. It sounds like they're having fun with this and really looking forward to this race this weekend as they make some history.
Well, and I just think about the thought process of what they all put into this. You know, they want to do it. It's history making, but also to get the most out of it. You know, she mentioned there were some reasons behind possibly doing it at Irwindale, some reasons behind doing it at Las Vegas. So, you know, how much thought just for one race and to be able to put the package together, the car together, the sponsorship and all that to come together for such a big event. I think Las Vegas is a great one. Wouldn't mind seeing it at Irwindale, but I think the attention, as she mentioned there, Sarah mentioned with the Cup Series being there as
mm-hmm.
well, promotion-wise, I think is going to be a lot bigger as well.
Yeah, I think so, too. And it is going to be fun to watch them race each other on that bull ring with all those cars that are going to be out there on the track. So we'll have to check that out. There will be, I believe, a replay of this race. I'm going to check out the broadcast schedule here, because if you can't be at Las Vegas Bullring this weekend, the USA will have a tape delay of this race on Friday, October the 21st at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And as I mentioned, if you can't watch it on Flow Racing, listen to the radio broadcast at ArcaRacing.com. It's going to be a fun race for sure. And this just adds, I think, another element to it. That interview, by the way, was around 17 minutes. We can only listen to just under 5 minutes of it, but you can hear it over at ArcaRacing.com as well.
Yeah, I might have to go to listen to it. I don't know if that question got asked. I know they touched on the competition between the two, but my question would be, as Sarah's normally the crew chief, did she coach and teach everything to Bridget she needs to know, or is she going to now go out there and show her? Or is Bridget, as the one learning, saying, hey, look what I learned from you, beat you pretty good?
Mm-hmm. Well, she did mention that Bridget has the better car, she thinks. So I think that's going to motivate her to try to do whatever she can do to compete with her daughter at that race. Even though she feels her daughter has the better car, it would be quite an accomplishment if mom can keep up the paces with her.
I did hear where she said, yeah, she eliminated road course racing. She knew where Bridget's road course talent laid there, so she chose not to go with that one head-to-head.
Exactly. Okay, now we do have another interview here. This one is from the 2022 ARCA Racing champion, Sanchez. He drove the number 2 for Rev Racing this season. And the ARCA Menards Series wrapped up their season at the season finale at Toledo Speedway a week ago. So Nick was able to meet with some media members this week, and they conducted the interview with him. So let's take a listen to what Nick had to say in this interview. And I will say this interview is closer to about 15 and a half minutes. Again, we're just going to listen to a small portion, about 5 minutes, and then Jay and I will comment afterward.
Hi, Nick. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, I got you.
Fantastic. Well,
first
of all, congratulations. You are the 2022 ARCA Menards Series champion. If you would just open us up by taking us through the emotion of what I just said. You are the ARCA Menards Series champion. And, you know, maybe just kind of walk us through your season and how you got here.
Yeah. It's still pretty cool being, I guess, introduces that. But, yeah, our season started in February, and I guess starting the year, like, I didn't really it's so far away and so much could go right and wrong that you don't think about, you know, points or anything. But our season didn't get off the best start at Daytona, and Phoenix had a flat tire in Daytona, and then Phoenix just kind of missed it a little bit. But obviously when we started, you know, knock off those wins at Dega in Kansas and then start to have some pretty good runs, that's when I guess our season took off. There was a lot of races. I mean, we had three wins, but there was a lot of races that I think we could have won. Mid-Ohio, Pocono. But I think it was a pretty solid year for my team.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations again. And we will now go to questions from the media, and we will start things off with Nathan Solomon. Go ahead with your question, Nathan.
Thank you. Hey, Nick. Thanks for your time and congratulations. You know, throughout the season, it seemed like the rev cars really, both you and Roger, really seemed to thrive on some of the bigger tracks more and struggle a little bit more on the short tracks. That being said, the back half of the schedule is more short track Chevy. So how are you able to kind of manage that points gap over Daniel when those times he's better on some of those short tracks?
Yeah, I mean, we just had to maximize our day and kind of eliminate mistakes, but also capitalize on the tracks that we knew we were going to be strong at. Michigan, Pocono, Kansas. I think if it wasn't for our strong runs and wins at tracks like that, we probably wouldn't be in that position. But as far as our short track stuff, you know, I knew I wanted to get better and my team wanted to get better. And we just tried to keep improving. Berlin and Elko, those tracks were pretty rough on us. But, you know, we got through them, and my team and I capitalized on the track that we knew we were going to be very competitive on.
And then as a follow-up, kind of later in the year, guys like Sammy Smith had birthdays. I was making him eligible for more races and then going to more of those short tracks later in the year. More guys like Jesse Love, Taylor Gray, they made more starts. So how do you think some of those younger guys being more present later in the year maybe affected the back half of the season, the championship fight?
I don't think it affected it too much. You know, most of the short tracks Sammy and Jesse were running at to begin with. But then, I mean, you saw Michigan and Pocono, even though Sammy did turn 18, you know, we were able to outrun them. So I don't think it really affected us on the big track stuff. Short tracks, obviously, I feel like they got better as the year went on, and we kind of, you know, plateaued. So, yeah.
We'll take our next question from Bob Packers. Go ahead with your question, Bob.
Yeah, Nick, I just wanted to check. Do you have plans set yet for next year, or when do you think those will be done?
I do know what I'm going to be driving next year, but that hopefully will be announced later in October. But yeah,
it's safe to say the Truck Series.
Somewhere. I think it's probably leaning more towards that.
Okay. Thank you.
Question from Lee Spencer. Go ahead with your question, Lee.
Thanks for joining us today, Nick. To kind of follow up on Pocky's question, you look at the great reputation that KBM has for developing young drivers. Is that a place that you would be interested in driving next year?
Yeah, obviously. That would be pretty cool to, you know, get the opportunity there. I think that's top organization, but I don't know where I'm going to kind of land, but I think it will be probably more so in that series. But yeah, I mean, that would obviously be a really cool opportunity if I did get that.
Have you followed some of the drivers that have come there and what they've been able to do, the William Byrnes, the Christopher Bells, Eric Jones? I mean, the list just goes on and on with, you know, the kind of organization that he has and the depth of it and what these young drivers have been able to accomplish in the higher series, which I'm assuming you're aspiring to as well.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, obviously, if I get that opportunity, that would be awesome. I don't know, but I feel like when you look at a Truck Series team, they're probably at the top of the list as far as development for drivers. I know, obviously, it will be a Chevy team. I don't exactly know where the landing spot will be. But still have a little bit of a chance in Xfinity. So I know it's going to be one of the two.
All right. So that's good news for Nick Sanchez. It sounds like he's coming up to the NASCAR Xfinity or Truck Series for next season.
Well, it's great. To wrap up the season, first I want to talk about his championship season. He talked about it at the beginning of the season. Yeah, it's in your mind, but you can't put the focus on it. It's running week to week. And I know he mentioned a couple of races that maybe got away from him. And then as we saw, mm-hmm. that points tightened up, spread out a little bit, tightened up again there, 2 points to the throughout that race. To be able to handle that and keep your focus, as you mentioned, on just the one race, capitalizing on your good track and good runs and having to let those others go.
Yeah, earlier in the season, he was competing against his teammate, Rajah Caruso, who was at the top of the points. So when he says that he missed it on those couple of races in the beginning of the season, I think that was a missed opportunity for him to lead the points, right from the very beginning. But I'm sure, competing against his teammate made both of them better, I think, throughout the season.
Then the other half of that we just got to listen to in that little clip there, I don't know what's tougher, winning a championship or not talking about something he said he already knows, but they're not ready to announce and having to not answer those questions.
Yes. That's kind of a tough position that they put him in. But it does sound like he's going to have a landing spot for next season, and I hope it does all work out for him.
That's right. Good position, but a tough position, no doubt.
Exactly. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to our NASCAR series. The Camping World Truck Series will not be racing this weekend. Their next race is going to be at Homestead Miami Speedway Saturday, October 22nd. But we do have a couple of notes here that we can kind of share with you. As it relates to maybe some clinch scenarios or some double duty that they're doing while they're not racing in the truck series this weekend. There's five competitors racing in the Xfinity series.
Well, and we start with truck series playoff contender John Hunter Nemechek. He'll be in the number 26 Sam Hunt Racing Toyota again this weekend at Las Vegas. And then Rajah Caruth will be in the number 44 Alpha Prime Racing Chevrolet. And we also got Matt Jaskel. He'll be piloting the number 13 Motorsports Business Management Toyota. Let's see, who else do we have? Matt Mills, he'll be in the number 5 BJ McLeod Motorsports Chevrolet this weekend. And Haley Deegan, we talked about history making, attempt to make her NASCAR Xfinity Series career debut this weekend with SS Greenlight Racing with Jeff LaCourte in the number 07 Chevrolet. So those are the five you mentioned. The truck series does not return to action until next week at Homestead Miami, so fans of the series can catch some of these drivers in the Xfinity series.
Absolutely. That'll be fun. Okay, it's a make it or break it, one shot for the championship four. And it all comes down to Homestead Miami next weekend. Let's go over the competitors just to keep it fresh in everybody's mind. We'll go from the bottom up, two by two.
Okay. Start with, Grant Enfinger, unfortunately, the one at the bottom. But driver of the number 23 GMS Racing Chevrolet has posted 5 starts, 1 top 5 and 3 top 10s, with 1 pole coming in 2018 at the Miami track. His average start is 7.6. Average finish, though, 11.4. John Hunter Nemechek, he's driver of the number 4 Kyle Busch Motorsports Toyota. He's got 4 starts at Miami with 1 top 5 and 2 top 10s. Average start is 7.5. Average finish, 8.8.
All right, a little bit of a competitive edge there. There's also Stuart Friesen, driver of the number 52, Halmar Friesen Toyota. He's made 5 starts at the 1.5-mile track just north of the Florida Keys, and he's got 1 top 5 and 2 top 10s. In those starts, his average start at that track is 11.2. His average finish is a 13.0. Christian Eckes is the driver of the number 98 Thor Sport Racing Toyota. He has 2 starts at Homestead Miami, posting 1 top 5 and 2 top 10s. His average, he has an average start of 3.0, and his average finish is the best we've heard so far, 5.5.
And we got Ben Rhodes. He's driver of the number 99 Thor Sport Racing Toyota. His five starts at the 1.5-mile Miami track. He's got one top 10 coming in 2018, led a total of 45 laps. Average start is about the same as everybody else, 7.8. Average finish a little higher at 15.8. Zane Smith is the driver of the number 38 Front Row Motorsports Ford. He's only got one start at the track in 2020. Unfortunately, finished 37th after an incident early sidelined his truck on lap 19.
Okay. Next up are the top two drivers, Chandler Smith, the driver of the number 18, Kyle Busch Motorsports Toyota. He's posting his first truck series start at Miami next weekend, so we don't have any stats for him as of yet, but he's going to build on that from this weekend. Ty Majeski, he's the driver of the number 66 Thor Sport Racing Toyota. He has the one start at Homestead Miami in 2020, where he posted a 10th place finish. So a lot to look forward to there next weekend.
Now, as we went through those, you saw the playoff bubble. It's Eckes, Friesen, Nemechek, and Enfinger. They're outside the Champ 4 cut line. So when we look at the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series playoff following that second race around 8 at Talladega Super Speedway, the postseason competitors are tasked with trying to make the championship four round with only that one race to go. Now, Thor Sports Racing's Ty Majeski, he won at Bristol in the round of 8 opener, and non-playoff driver Matt DiBenedetto snagged the win at Talladega, which leaves three spots still up for grabs. Heading into that next playoff race, it's Chandler Smith and Zane Smith assume the second and third playoff spot positions, respectively. Ty Majeski's Thor Sport Racing teammate Ben Rhodes, currently ranked in the fourth and final transfer spot to the championship four round, is only up 3 points on teammate Christian Eckes in fifth. Then behind Eckes is the Halmar Friesen Racing, Stuart Friesen in sixth, is 3 points below the cut line. Kyle Busch Motorsports' John Henner Nemechek in seventh is 5 points back. And GMS Racing Chevrolet Grant Enfinger is currently in eighth, 29 points back. He's pretty much in a have to win, really close to it if not.
Exactly. But it's really tight right there by the cut line. Okay, next up we'll talk about South Beach to help decide this year's championship four round contenders. They're going to be finishing up a 2-week break before coming back to race their last race in the playoff round of 8, the Baptist Health 200 out at Homestead, Miami on Saturday, October the 22nd. Now, with a win by a non-playoff driver, Matt DiBenedetto, at the series' last race at Talladega Super Speedway, only one driver has secured his spot in the championship four round at Phoenix, and that's with a win at Bristol Motor Speedway by Ty Majeski. So Matt DiBenedetto means that means that three drivers are probably going to make it in on points. If there is a playoff driver that wins this weekend, then it would be two drivers that will make it in on points. The following drivers have already clinched their spot into the round of four, and that's Ty Majeski with that win. But if there's a repeat winner or a win by a driver who cannot advance to the next round, these drivers can clinch by being ahead of the fourth winless driver in the standings. So these point values that I'm going to go over here are going to hold true if a new win would happen to also come from Chandler Smith or Zane Smith or Ben Rhodes. So Chandler Smith needs 26 points. Zane needs 38 points. Ben Rhodes, 52 points. Christian Eckes can only clinch with a win, as it is the case for Stuart Friesen, John Hunter Nemechek, and Grant Enfinger. So if there's a new winner from Christian Eckes or another winless driver will win in the standings, but still eligible to advance to the next round, then these drivers can clinch by being ahead of the third winless driver in the standings. Chandler Smith needs 29 points, Zane Smith 41, and then these drivers all need a win. Ben Rhodes, Christian Eckes, Stuart Friesen, John Hunter Nieman, Check, and Grant Infinger. Now, all of these drivers, of course, can clinch if they get a win at Homestead Miami. And so that includes Chandler and Zane Smith, Ben Rhodes, Christian Eckes, Stuart Friesen, John Hunter Nieman, Check, and, of course, Grant Infinger. So it's going to be fun to see what happens this week.
Well, and you heard it there in those points. I mean, they're pretty big points gaps, and most of the drivers, it says, need help. So the only way you can help yourself without anybody else, win that race.
Exactly right. And that is exactly what all drivers want to do when they enter a race, is go out there and win it. And there's no better time for these Camping World Truck Series drivers to do it than at Homestead Miami. One thing we should note is we're coming down to the last couple of races here in the Camping World Truck Series with the owner Marcus Lemonis. Camping World is ending their sponsorship or their title sponsorship of the series at the end of the race at Phoenix. And so we know that Craftsman Truck Series is what it will be known as next season. So there's a little bit of sentimentality, I think, here watching these last two races at Homestead Miami and Phoenix coming up in the next couple of weeks.
And what Camping World as a brand, I know one year we had the Gander Outdoor Truck Series, but Mark and Lamone, mm-hmm. What he's done with this brand for this series cannot be understated. I mean, it has just been such a huge impact and carried the Camping World Truck Series for the last, I don't even know how many years it's been.
Yes, it's been at least 10 years, I think. And we'll look forward to welcoming Craftsman back, but we're certainly going to miss Camping World Truck Series they do their last dance, if you will, at Homestead and Phoenix. Okay, let's go ahead and get into the Xfinity Series. They are racing this weekend out at Las Vegas Motor Speedway in the Altsco Uniforms 302 on Saturday, October the 15th at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The purse for this race is $1,272,611. It will be televised on NBC starting at 3 p.m. Eastern, and radio coverage is on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio Channel 90. They'll be racing a distance of 301.5 miles over 201 laps. The first two stages are 45 laps each, stage one ending on lap 45, stage two on lap 90, and the last stage will be 111 laps, ending on lap 201.
And the first note we got here is that we mentioned earlier, Haley Deegan is going to make her Xfinity Series debut this weekend. She's a regular NASCAR Camping World Truck Series driver, be making the Xfinity Series debut this weekend with the number 07 Ford with SS Greenlight Racing. And Deegan will look to become the 23rd different female competitor to compete in the NASCAR Xfinity Series all time. She is in her second full-time season in the Camping World Truck Series with David Gilliland Racing. She's posted three top tens and 44 starts, finished a career-high six earlier this month at Talladega Super Speedway. The best finish by a female driver in her NASCAR Xfinity Series career debut is 15th by Shauna Robinson on June 8, 1991 at Rougemont. The all-time best starting position by a female driver in the Xfinity Series is the pole position, which was won by Shauna Robinson in 1994 at Atlanta, as well as Danica Patrick in 2021 coming at Daytona. The all-time best finish by a female driver in the NASCAR Xfinity Series is fourth. That was also by Danica Patrick in 2011 happened to come at this weekend's track, Las Vegas Motor Speedway.
Okay, so that's going to be fun to watch. Daniel Hemric is returning to college racing for the 2023 season. He originally signed on for a one-year deal with Colleg in 2022. Well, now he signed an extension with the team and will once again be behind the wheel of that number 11 Chevrolet. Hemric made it to the round of 12 in the postseason, and he has scored 2 top 5s, 10 top 10s, and a pole so far this season. Many of you will remember last year he won the championship by getting his very first victory in the season finale.
And that's great. I know when they made their other driver announcements, that was one that was still kind of a question mark. So that's great to see.
It is indeed.
Where's this next break start here? The field is set. Field
sitting
is
pretty
set
in
the round
Sin
of...
City.
Okay, missed one. There we go. Saturday's ALSCO Uniforms 302 will be sure to have fans on the edge of their seats. For most of the playoff field has been pretty lucky at the 1.5-mile track set in Las Vegas. Multiple drivers have posted wins at the track, while even more have consistently finished in the top 10. We're going to take a look at the whole playoff field here at the track in Sin City. And we go two by two here as well, Sharon.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start with Sam Mayer, the driver of the number one Junior Motorsports Chevrolet, has 2 starts at the track with a best finish of 25th. And then Brandon Jones, the driver of the number 19 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota, has 11 starts at Las Vegas with 2 top 5s and 8 top 10s. His best finish is 3rd. In 2019 and again in 2021, he has an average start of 12.1 with an average finish of 9.3.
Now, Austin Hill, driver of the number 21 Richard Childress Racing Chevrolet, he only has 2 starts at the track, a best finish of 17th, but having a very good year. Josh Berry, he's driver of the number 8 Junior Motorsports Chevrolet. He's got 1 more start with 3 at the track, doesn't contain a victory. 2021, and then 2 top 5s and 3 top 10s. The average start is 8.7. Average finish is 4.0.
Impressive. Justin Allgaier, the driver of the number 7 Junior Motorsports Chevrolet, has 16 starts at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. He's got 8 top 5s and 13 top 10s. He has the best finish of 2nd in 3 years, 2011, 2018, and again in 2021. His average start is 10.3. His average finish is at 7.9. Ty Gibbs, the driver of the number 54, Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota, is the most recent Xfinity Series winner at Las Vegas. In his 2 starts, he's posted 1 win that came earlier this year, 1 top 5, and 1 top 10.
Well, a couple others with some impressive stats here, the top 2 in the standings for that reason. A.J. Allmendinger, mm-hmm. driver of the number 16 Colleg Racing Chevrolet, 3 starts at the Las Vegas track, also has 1 win in 2021, 1 top 5, 3 top 10s, and a pole in 2022. Average start of 4.3 and an average finish of 5.7. Now, it's going to be tough to beat, but Noah Gregson, driver of the number 9 Junior Motorsports Chevrolet, has a total of 7 starts at the track, 6 top 5s, and all 7 top 10s. He finished runner-up when the Xfinity Series was there earlier this season. The average start of 14.3, but the average finish 3.6.
That's the best we saw in that group. Okay, the field is set for the round of 8 after a wild elimination race at Charlotte Motor Speedway's Roval that went into overtime with Colleg Racing's A.J. Allmendinger taking his 4th consecutive win at the track. The field is set for the first race in the round of 8 at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. The 8 drivers still in the hunt for the championship are Noah Gregson, A.J. Allmendinger, Ty Gibbs, Justin Allgaier, Josh Berry, Austin Hill, Brandon Jones, and Sam Mayer. We just gave you all of their stats. Now, with a new round comes three new opportunities to make it into that Championship Four group at Phoenix Raceway on November 5th. The first stop is Las Vegas Motor Speedway on October 15th, this weekend, followed by Homestead, Miami on October 22nd, and then Martinsville is the next elimination race on October the 29th. Any of the eight playoff players could clinch their spot into the Championship Four with a win at Las Vegas this weekend, but we also want to take a look at how they look heading into the race. As of right now, Noah Gregson, Allmendinger, Gibbs, Allgaier, they all sit above the cut line. Gregson leads the pack at 3,056 points, but not far behind him is Allmendinger at 3,044 points. Gibbs slides into third in the standings at 3,038 points, followed by Justin Allgaier in that final Championship Four spot at 3,033 points. Those drivers just outside that cut line are Josh Berry. He's down by 11 points. Then Hill, the rookie, is down by 15 points. He's sixth in the standings. And in the last two spots of the round of eight, Brandon Jones down 22 points and Sam Mayer down 28. So we'll see if this first race in the round of eight will make a difference for these drivers.
Well, and it's real important there for the two of them you mentioned already, 22 and 28 back, to have a really good first round so they don't get in that must-win situation right away with race number two.
Absolutely.
My page jumped on me here. As we look at the Xfinity Series, they pressed their luck there in Las Vegas. They wrapped up the round of 12, which set these eight drivers. That happened at Charlotte Motor Speedway Road Course, and now it's going to kick off this last round with the three tracks we mentioned at Las Vegas Motor Speedway with the ALSCO Uniforms 302. Now, Vegas is that first round of the round of eight for the playoff contenders to earn their spot into the Championship Four. The 1.5-mile Las Vegas Motor Speedway track has hosted a total of 30 NASCAR Xfinity Series races. This is interesting, producing 22 different race winners and 18 different pole winners. And Joe Gibbs Racing's Ty Gibbs became the track's youngest winner when he took the checkered flag earlier this season at 19 years, 5 months, and 1 day. Mark Martin sits as the oldest winner with his 2011 win at 52 years, 1 month, and 24 years old. Cup Series regular Kyle Busch, as a lot of times, holds both the qualifying record at 185.58 miles per hour and the race record at 145.415 miles per hour in the Xfinity Series at Las Vegas. He's also led the most laps at 619, tied for the most poles with Carl Edwards, Matt Kenseth, Mark Martin, and Cole Custer with two. Now, playoff driver Justin Allgaier holds the record for the most top fives at eight, top 10s at 13, and lead lap finishes at 14. NASCAR Hall of Famer Mark Martin holds the record for the most Xfinity Series wins at Las Vegas. He has four, coming in 1999, 2005, 2008, and then again in 2011. We mentioned the most recent winner at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. That's playoff driver Ty Gibbs. If he snags another win at the track, not only will he be the first to clinch his spot in the Championship Four, but also become the second driver in Las Vegas Motor Speedway Xfinity Series history to post back-to-back wins. The first and only driver to accomplish the feat is Chase Briscoe, as he did it in 2020 for a sweep. Now, this will be the first time that Las Vegas Motor Speedway kicks off this round of eight in the Xfinity Series playoffs. In 2020 and 21 seasons, the Las Vegas track was the first race in the postseason, with Chase Briscoe winning the race in 2020, Josh Berry winning it in 2021. Now, Las Vegas was not a postseason track from 2016 to 2019. Things for the Xfinity Series will get rolling with practice at 8:35 p.m. Eastern time, followed by qualifying at 9:05 p.m. Eastern on Friday, October 14th. That'll be covered on the USA Network.
Okay, another great race. First race in their round of eight, and that's going to hold true for the NASCAR Cup Series as well. They're racing the South Point 400 at Las Vegas Motor Speedway on Sunday, October the 16th, starting at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The purse is hefty, $7,352,089. It will be televised on NBC starting at 2 p.m. Eastern with radio coverage on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio 90. They'll be racing a distance of 400.5 miles over 267 laps. The first stage ends on lap 80. The second stage is 85 laps, ending on lap 165. And then the last lap, the final stage, is 102 laps, ending on lap 267. So what do we have for the Cup Series, Jay?
Well, the round of eight, Las Vegas Motor Speedway, is a gem in the desert. It's a great city with tons to do, but nothing on the strip this weekend compared to the drama that Las Vegas Motor Speedway will be dishing up in the 1.5-mile track serves as the jump starter for the NASCAR Cup Series playoffs round of eight with the South Point 400 here on Sunday, October 16th. Eight playoff contenders will begin their hunt for one of four spots in the Championship Four round and have a shot at this season's title coming from this weekend at Las Vegas, which is the second-to-last 1.5-mile track on the schedule. The first NASCAR Cup Series rig at Las Vegas Speedway was held on March 1st, 1998. NASCAR Hall of Famer Dale Jarrett won the pole for the inaugural event at NASCAR Hall of and NASCAR Hall of Famer Mark Martin won the race, and he was driving for a Ford for RFK Racing. In total, there's been 29 NASCAR Cup Series races at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, coming from 1998 to 2022. The 1.5-mile track has hosted one race per season from 98 to 2017. The 2018 season marked the first time that Las Vegas hosted two NASCAR Cup Series events in a single season, as they have all the way through now, 2022. We've had a total of 18 different drivers that have won the pole in the NASCAR Cup Series at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Casey Kane leads the NASCAR Cup Series in poles at Las Vegas with three, coming in 2004, 7, and 12. Kyle Busch leads all active NASCAR Cup Series drivers in poles at Las Vegas Motor Speedway with two at 2008 and 9. And of the 18 NASCAR Cup Series pole winners at Las Vegas, seven are active this weekend. Mentioned Kyle Busch with his two. Christopher Bell had one in 2022. Harvick in 19. Eric Jones picked one up in the 18 playoffs. Ryan Blaney, the other one, in 18. Brad Keselowski had one in 2017. And Joey Logano back in 2014. A total of 17 different NASCAR Cup Series drivers have won at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And eight different drivers have won more than once at the 1.5-mile track. Jimmy Johnson leads the Cup Series and wins at Las Vegas with four victories, 05, 06, 07, and then again in 2010. Brad Keselowski leads the active drivers in the Cup Series as he has three victories at Las Vegas, coming in 2014, 16, and 18. Of the 17 Cup Series winners at Las Vegas, eight of them are active this weekend, two currently playoff contenders, Joey Logano and Denny Hamlin. Of those active race winners, Brad Keselowski with his three. Joey Logano's came in two races came in 2020 and 19. Kevin Harvick in 2018 and 15. And it doesn't list the years for Martin Truex, but he also has a pair, I believe.
Yeah, did you start at the top? I'm trying to figure out where you are. I think you started at the top.
Now is that with that last section, the round of eight, Las Vegas Motor Speedway, the gem in the desert. I went off the page here. Let me go back to where. Next up, that I show is the clinch scenarios.
Well, mine starts if we're going bottom up, that NASCAR Cup Series featured matchups for the South Point 400.
Gotcha. Yeah, the Jayski one is missing more. I'll jump over onto what you sent me, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, I just, like, where is he? Okay, I'll go ahead and start with William Byron versus Chase Briscoe. The dark horses and the contenders, whatever you want to call William Byron and Chase Briscoe, they are both in the round of eight. And it was a wild week for both of them to reach it. Byron won his appeal and raced well enough to reach the round of eight. And Chase Briscoe was actually below the cut line and set to be eliminated, but pit before the overtime and used his fresh tires to make enough passes and knock reigning champion Kyle Larson into elimination. Now Briscoe stands as the only Stewart House Racing Ford left in the playoffs, while Byron has Hendrick teammate Chase Elliott in the round of eight alongside him. Now both Briscoe and Byron have taken a jump in their careers, showing they are true wheelmen and championship contenders. Both are sitting below the current cut line, but Vegas stands as their first chance to make up some points on the field and set themselves up for the final two races in the round of eight.
Well, and we've seen this matchup on the track as well as in the media, Ross Chastain versus Denny Hamlin, because it's been a well-documented season of drama between the two. However, it's been a quiet playoffs between them. Hamlin has promised revenge on Chastain, and both now sit in the round of eight. Maybe the time for these two drivers to entangle once again. Chastain raced well here in the spring, bringing home his first top three in Las Vegas. It's also a particularly good track, though, for Hamlin, who has one win and three top fives in his last seven races here. As we currently stand, Hamlin is below the cut line, trailing Chastain by 8 points. So expect Hamlin to be pedal to the metal in his pursuit to win his Cup Series championship.
Okay, our next matchup is Chase Elliott and Joey Logano. Now, heading to Las Vegas, Elliott sits atop the playoff standings, while Logano is right behind him in second. Both Elliott and Logano have shown consistency throughout the playoffs and find themselves in outstanding position to qualify for the championship race at Phoenix. But they'll have to take care of business in these next three races, which all starts with Las Vegas this weekend. They're positioned to do so as they both boast driver ratings over 100 at Las Vegas. Logano has 2 wins in his last 7 races here, while Elliott is winless, but he does have 2 top 5s. In the spring, Elliott finished 9th here. Logano actually finished 14th.
Next there, the last one we got is the fan vote, and that's Christopher Bell versus Ryan Blaney. There's an old saying that tires wins races, and for Christopher Bell, that was true at the Charlotte Roval. He pitted under a late caution, turned out to be the winning move for Bell, as he used a restart to work his way up to second place before another caution brought out overtime. From there, he used a good restart to clear Kevin Harvick and go from being eliminated to clinching his spot in the round of eight. Now that the wild round of 12 has passed, both Bell and Ryan Blaney have 3 races to go before that championship race at Phoenix. Now, first on the list is Las Vegas. Blaney holds a strong advantage in the driver rating, though, at 98.5 to 17.3. But in the spring race, Blaney...
73.1.
I'm sorry, yep, 73.1. I read that wrong. In this spring race, though, Blaney wrecked and finished 34th, while Bell posted a top 10. Now, they're separated by only 3 points in the standings, so it'll be a pivotal race there in Sin City.
Absolutely. Okay, now the playoffs' biggest moments, the 6 walk-off wins. Christopher Bell's win this past weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway's Roval was the 6th time in the elimination-style playoff era from 2014 to the current year that a driver below the cut line in points was able to advance to the next round with a win on his way into that next round. There are 5 other times that playoff magic happened. In 2014, heading into the round of 12 elimination race, at Talladega Super Speedway. It was Brad Keselowski was 10th in the playoff standings. He actually won the race, earning his spot into the round of eight. Also in 2014, heading into the round of eight elimination race at Phoenix Raceway, Kevin Harvick was 8th in the playoff standings and won the race to earn his spot in the championship four round. Harvick would then win again the following week at Homestead Miami in the season finale to pocket his first career Cup Series championship. In 2015, heading into the round of 16 elimination race at Dover Motor Speedway, again, Kevin Harvick was ranked 15th in the playoff standings and won the race, earning his spot into that round of 12. In 2019, heading into the round of eight elimination race at Phoenix Raceway, Denny Hamlin was 5th in the playoff standings and won the race to earn his spot into the championship four round. And then in 2020, heading into the playoff round of eight elimination race at Martinsville Speedway, Chase Elliott was 5th in the playoff standings, tied with his Hendrick Motorsports teammate Alex Bowman, who was in 4th. Well, Elliott won the race, earning his spot into the championship four round. Elliott would then go on to win at Phoenix Raceway the next weekend and take home his first career NASCAR Series title. So pretty cool and some big moments in the playoff format.
Well, we'll see if we get any more from the Elite Eight. As the playoff challengers at Las Vegas Speedway, only eight drivers left in the playoffs to decide who's going to win the 2022 NASCAR Cup Series Championship. And of those eight, only two are former winners at this weekend's Las Vegas Motor Speedway, Logano and Hamlin. So with so much on the line heading into this Sunday, take a look at the career performances of the eight playoff drivers at Las Vegas. I'll scroll down here. Chase Briscoe, you want to do two by two here?
Yeah, let's do 2x2.
All right, so Chase Briscoe enters the round of eight as the number eight seed. He's now back 9 points from the championship four cut line. In six playoff starts this season, he's posted one top five and three top tens. The average finish in the postseason is 13.0. This season is the first time he has advanced to the round of eight here in 2022. Well, Briscoe's made three series starts at Las Vegas, posting a best finish of 14th in the race last season. He finished 35th at the 1.5-mile track earlier this season due to an incident. Denny Hamlin, he's entering the round of eight as the number seven seed, behind 5 points from the cut line. In six playoff starts this season, he's posted three top fives and five top tens. His average finish in the postseason, 6.8, which is best among playoff contenders. Season is the seventh time he's advanced to the round of eight, coming in 2014, 16, 17, and then 2019 through the current year of 2022. Hamlin has made 21 series starts at Las Vegas. He's got one victory, five top fives, and 10 top tens. Another one had an issue. He finished 32nd at Las Vegas earlier this season, though, due to a drivetrain issue.
Okay, next up we've got William Byron entering the round of eight as the number six seed, back 3 points from the championship four cut line. In six playoff starts this season, he has one top five and four top tens. His average finish in the postseason is 8.7. This season is the first time that he has advanced to the round of eight. Ian Byron has made 9 starts at Las Vegas, posting one top five, three top tens, and he finished 5th at Las Vegas earlier this season. Ryan Blaney is the number five seed entering the round of eight. He's back 3 points from the championship four cut line. And in six playoff starts this season, he has two top fives and three top tens. His average finish this postseason is 14.0. This season is the fourth time that he's advanced to the round of eight. He did it in 17, 19, 21, and 22. Now, Blaney's made 12 starts at Las Vegas, posting five top fives and eight top tens. He finished 36th at the 1.5-mile track earlier this season, again due to an incident.
Now, Christopher Bell now enters the round of eight above the cut line. He's the number four seed, up 3 points. In six playoff starts this season, he has posted the one win coming here at the Charlotte Road Course, four top fives, and an average finish this postseason is 10.7. This season is the first time he has advanced to the round of eight here in 2022. He's made a total of five starts at the Las Vegas Speedway, posting two top tens, one of being a 10th place finish at the 1.5-mile track earlier this year. And Ross Chastain, he enters the round of eight in the number three spot, up 6 points on the championship four-round cut line. In the six playoff starts on the year, posted one top five and three top ten finishes. His average finish during the postseason, a 14.5. Now, this season is the first time for 2022 that he's advanced to the round of eight. Chastain has made eight series starts at Las Vegas, where he's posted one top five. It was a strong third-place finish at the 1.5-mile track earlier this year.
Okay, next up we have Joey Logano. He's the number two seed in the round of eight, and he's up 11 points on the round of four, the championship four cut line. In six playoff starts this season, he's put up two top fives. His average finish in the postseason, however, is 15.8. This season is the eighth time that he's advanced to the round of eight, from 2014 to 16 and from 2018 to 22. Logano has made 18 series starts at Las Vegas. He's posted one pole, two wins, six top fives, 11 top tens. However, he finished 14th at Las Vegas earlier this season. Last up is Chase Elliott, entering the round of eight as the number one seed. He's up 31 points on the championship four round cut line. In six playoff starts this season, he's posted one win at Talladega. He also has two top fives. His average finish this postseason, however, is 17.0. This season is the sixth time that Chase Elliott has advanced to the round of eight. He did it from 2017 to 22. Now, Elliott's made 11 series starts at the track, posting three top fives and five top tens. He finished ninth at Las Vegas earlier this year.
Well, and ringing that bell, mentioned Christopher Bell, just put everyone on notice. As the Joe Gibbs Racing's driver shot out of a cannon to start the 2022 NASCAR Cup Series playoff as the only driver to score top fives in the first three races, clinching his spot into the next round early. But then in the round of 12, he skidded out, literally at Texas at 34th and Talladega at 17th, putting himself below the cut line for the round of eight heading into last weekend's elimination race. But the Oklahoma stormed back into contention with a massive walk-off win at the Charlotte Motor Speedway Road Course. The victory not only earned him a spot in the next round of the playoffs, but it put everyone back on notice that he is a titled contender this season. Now that their points are reseeded, he finds himself ranked fourth in the playoff standings, 3 points up on that championship four cut line. It's the first time in Bell's career he's advanced to the round of eight. At 27 years old, he's having the best season of his Young Cup career, putting up a season-to-date driver rating at 91.3, which is third best. He's got two victories, New Hampshire and the Charlotte Road Course, 11 top fives, 18 top tens, and four poles. He's led a total of 419 laps, an average finish of 13.8. We look to this weekend. Again, Bell has five starts with two top tens, won the pole, and finished 10th at the Vegas race earlier this year.
Yes, indeed. I can't wait to see what Christopher Bell does this weekend out at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Okay, we are at the top of the hour, and that means it is time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off with our Stanford Racing crew. And joining us for tonight's show are Andy Lasky. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good to have you back. It's going good. And also, Tommy Kraft. Welcome to the show, Tommy.
Hey, how are y'all? Thanks for having me back.
All right. All right. We are going to go ahead and get started with our hot topics. And Andy, I'm going to call on you to bring up our first hot topic for tonight.
Yeah, this one, might as well just get this one out of the way. Cole Custer and the 41 Stewart Haas Racing Team were fined 100 points, and the driver was fined $100,000, and the crew chief, Mike Shiflett, indefinitely suspended and fined $100,000 because, in the view of NASCAR, were in violation of manipulating the Charlotte Roval Cup Series event.
All right. Tommy, your thoughts about that penalty for Cole Custer and Stewart Haas Racing?
Yeah, this was all over Twitter this week. Kind of a controversial thing, I guess. I did see where Tony Stewart is so mad at NASCAR that he said that if it wasn't for the appearances he has to make at the next few races at the track, he wouldn't even go to the rest of the races this year. So he's pretty mad. I mean, the biggest reference that everybody was talking about on Twitter was how Chase Elliott blocked Kevin Harvick last year at Bristol, and Kyle Larson was able to win. And Cole Custer kind of sort of did the same thing, except Briscoe was able to go by and, you know, get the points he needed to advance to the round of eight. I don't know. To me, I feel like why not just let it slide, but obviously NASCAR thought it was an issue, so they fined them, and they, you know, they made that call, but, you know, kind of wish there was just more clarification on things, and, but yeah, it's just kind of, you know, everybody was just pointing out on Twitter how crazy it is that Chase Elliott basically did the same thing, and it was fine, and then this happens to Chase Briscoe with Cole Custer, and it's a problem, but I mean, they did let Chase Briscoe keep his points, and they said there wasn't an issue with Chase Briscoe. They just got Cole Custer for altering positions. But, you know, basically what Elliott did with Harvick, but anyway.
Okay, Jay, your thoughts?
Well, I think we could spend an entire two-hour-plus show on this one hot topic alone. As Tommy mentioned, I mean, Twitter is one thing. I've listened to it on SiriusXM morning, noon, and evening for about 3 days now, and there's a lot of different takes on it. If, as NASCAR feels, that the team attempted to manipulate the race to ensure Chase Briscoe was in, that's what they're going with, and they're penalized for. Now, I know Tommy brought up the Chase Elliott deal. They already referenced that in saying that Chase it acted alone and wasn't given team orders. So that was the difference in their mind when it comes to that. The other one, I know Mike and I had this discussion over several hot topics going back to the Michael Waltrip deal, where then Jeff Gordon was on the outside looking in, and then NASCAR put him in as a 13th driver into the round of 12. NASCAR immediately said that that would not be the case here. One of the biggest things was, at the time when it happened, Briscoe had already raced his way in. All it was add insurance points. I think he had, if there was a tiebreaker, he held the tiebreaker, and that just added to how much he got in by. He was already in on his own. They did say, however, if that had been different, then the penalty would have probably even been more severe. With the audio that they've matched up and the instruction and the way it happened, Mike Shiflett, the one calling as the crew chief, calling for Custer to check up because he had a tire going down, they didn't feel that he could make that call from his position on the track, and that all the data, braking, steering, and all this other technology data they could obtain, that there was no indication of that. So there was no way that Mike Shiflett could know that, feel it, or sense it, and especially give the direction to check up. You know, you may say, hey, you feel a tire, or you're having an issue, something to that effect. But the fact that it didn't come from the driver and then reported on by the spotter, as is usually the case during a race, especially during the closing laps of a race, of, hey, can you ride it out and get your best position, I think really led NASCAR to feel like this was done intentionally. So there's so much to unpack with it. I understand NASCAR's position. I mean, they have made it quite clear they don't want any kind of team orders, team direction, or manipulation of a finish of a race in order to ensure somebody else. However, I think they've opened a huge, huge can of worms when it comes to this. And I'll go around that on the second go round or fifth round. Like I said, we could go a couple hours on this.
Okay. Yeah, this is a little bit surprising that they went this far, but Scott Miller did give his justification. He said that the difference between the Chase Briscoe incident and the incident with Cole Custer is that Mike Shiplett basically told him to check up. He might have a tire going down. And so the fact that he checked up held up those drivers behind him, and that's what allowed Chase Briscoe to get around and put himself into that next round of eight. But here's the thing. Chase Briscoe was already in the round of eight due to a tiebreaker. That incident had nothing to do with Chase Briscoe being in that next round of eight. And that's what I think is kind of confusing, is that even if it did happen, I'm against team orders, I'm against the manipulation of the race, but that incident had absolutely nothing to do with Chase Briscoe getting into the next round of eight. And that's where, and I know Scott Miller did tell everybody that that's why they were not making any changes to the round of eight, because Chase Briscoe had made it in on his own without that incident. So I get that NASCAR is also against team orders. They don't want it to happen. Again, I think Jay outlined it very well. There are basically the two reasons why they acted in the way that they did. But I got to say, Stewart Haas Racing was hit very hard with the incident, with the penalty for Kevin Harvick, and then this penalty and the indefinite suspension of Mike Shiplett. So it was a hard hit. It's understandable why Tony Stewart is upset about it. I just wish NASCAR would be more consistent so that we all know where that line is. I think they drew a line this week, but it is confusing that there were some other incidents where nothing ever happened. Andy?
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of, you know, my thoughts on it too. You know, obviously it's really frustrating to see an incident like that happen. We've talked on this show numerous other occasions about how we don't, as race fans, like to see team orders or, you know, manipulating the race, you know, to generate an outcome. So you hate to see it. It's frustrating, especially, you know, because as a fan of the 14 car, you know, I'm super happy that they put together a performance that allowed them to advance. And having followed the whole race, I know that there was no team orders or anything, at least on their channel. And so in my mind, I'm like, oh, cool. They made it to the next round on their own accord, you know, via hard work, you know, and then this incident happens and I feel like it tarnishes it. And, you know, people's, not everyone's opinion, but a lot of opinions are, well, he shouldn't be there. He only got there because of a teammate, which, as you've already outlined, isn't true. He actually did hold the tiebreaker on points, but it just, you hate to see it because it now tarnishes that accomplishment. So, but I think for me, you know, the issue that I have isn't the penalty. I'm good with the penalty because no matter who the team is, if they're found to be in violation of manipulating the race, they should be penalized for it. And in this case, they being NASCAR, determined there was enough evidence that warranted a penalty. So I'm good with it. You know, I think that the penalty fits the crime. However, I think my problem is the inconsistencies that we've seen with the non-calls in the past. And you've already outlined one example with the 9 last year at Bristol. I mean, and then another example a couple years ago at Martinsville where Eric Jones was told not to pass Denny Hamlin. That was a direct team order, which is a manipulation of race results. And so, you know, you look at both of those examples, and which are both examples of manipulating race results or the outcome of the race, and nothing was done about it. You know, and, you know, I will admit that what took place with the 41 is pretty questionable, and you can see why the penalty took place. But it's really the same thing. Manipulating a race is manipulating a race. And I think the problem I have is the fact that NASCAR basically said that it's okay for a driver, you know, in the Chase Elliott example, to manipulate race results, but it's not okay for the team itself to do it, which I think is complete BS. I mean, manipulating a race is manipulating a race. So it's like, you know, how is it okay for a driver to do it, but it's not okay for a crew chief to do it? So that's the problem I have, is if we're going to – it's okay that we have these penalties because, you know, none of us as race fans want to see – fabricated or manipulated race results. I don't like seeing it as much as anyone else does. But if we're going to have these severe penalties, let's make it consistent, you know, across the board, and let's not have it be certain race teams and drivers. Let's have it be everybody, because you get the feeling sometimes that, you know, certain people are given free passes, or maybe, you know, there's a blind eye turned toward them, and other teams maybe are hit just a little bit harder. So I'm not going to sit here and say that that's the case or not, but it seems that way sometimes when you look at the non-calls that have been taking place in the past versus, you know, what some other teams have been hit with penalties. And so I guess from my perspective, you just want to see it be consistent. So I think to Jay's point, this does open up a big can of worms because, you know, the message that I got out of this week was, it, you know, it's okay for a driver to go out there and block and, you know, race somebody hard or basically determine the outcome of a race, so long as the team doesn't do it. So I think that this is a very slippery slope that really probably could have been, you know, handled a little bit differently, but it is what it is, you know. And so but to kind of close out my own thoughts, like I said earlier, the penalty was warranted based off the results they found, and you know, you hate to see it, but they earned it. They earned that penalty, but just need to see some consistency, you know, in doing this with any of these incidents, whether it be a driver that does it or, you know, a team that calls for it or whatever the case may be. You know, I think also, you know, policing it's a tough call that in a tough position that NASCAR is put in too. You know, it's unfortunate they have to be put in this position of determining what is considered race manipulation and what's not. But, you know, when you have past examples that are essentially the same thing that are somehow considered okay, it is frustrating to see. So, you know, maybe moving forward, hopefully they can maybe outline the rules a little bit more so that people know exactly what's okay and what's not. But either way, you hate to see, you know, manipulation of race results and you know, the outcomes of finishes determined. But unfortunately, you know, in auto racing, team orders and you know, teammate help is probably always going to be there. It's extremely blatant in Formula One and other forms of motorsports where team orders are pretty much an every week thing. So I don't know if you'll ever see it go away completely, but, you know, maybe a little more clarity on what's acceptable and what's not would be good, because it's left me scratching my head in terms of, you know, how one incident can be okay and one isn't.
Okay. Tommy, your follow-up.
Yes, I kind of have to agree with what Andy's saying here about the consistency part, because it does look like NASCAR is playing a favorite sometimes with calling it and then sometimes calling it. But what I was going to say is this. The reason why I said let it slide and not fine him or penalize them is because, I mean, there is the driver is going to get communicated to that like, you know, hey, Chase is in front of you. You know, he's trying to get into the playoffs. Let's help him out. I mean, that communication is just going to be – they're just going to pass it along. Spotter, crew chief, you know, whatever. So, I mean, of course their friends will help them block so they can, you know, whatever. But, I mean, that's racing. And, I mean, I don't see – I get the altering the positions thing, but, I mean, it's kind of just common sense. Like, they're going to help each other out. I mean, that's just the way it goes. It kind of plays into the strategy type ordeal. I don't like it. I mean, Chase Elliott blocked Kevin Harvick, and that allowed Kyle Larson to win. That wasn't a penalty because they said that, you know, it was a driver doing it or whatever. He acted alone. I mean, they were beefing beforehand, and I get that, but he still basically blocked Kevin Harvick while he was in the lead, and Chase was probably a lap down at this point. And Kyle Larson passed Kevin Harvick and won the race. That seems like altering a position to me, and it was a no call. But it helped Chase get into the playoffs, so that's the only reason why they're getting Cole Custer the penalty. But they didn't find Chase, which I like because, I mean, Chase was just racing. His friend was helping him out. That's why I think it should have been a let it fly type deal.
Okay, Jay, your thoughts.
Well, Sharon, you can't take my thoughts because Andy and Tommy then followed up on them, pretty much did. Which, I mean, and that tells you, if everybody's got the same thought process, obviously NASCAR had to do something. You can't let it slide because then it just keeps happening. It's very unfortunate, and as I said, this is going to create a bigger thing. The question I have, I'm going to leave the Chase Elliott one alone for a minute, as I try and work Mike into my thoughts here, but going to Andy said it, and I wouldn't have remembered what race, Martinsville, Eric Jones was told, do not pass Denny Hamlin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how does that not? So that's where, like we've all said, of that inconsistency. Then you go to the Chase Elliott situation, though, and the other one I would use there is Denny Hamlin and Ross Chastain. The rule, as NASCAR has written it, is you give 100% for the best position, finishing position of your team. If you're out there driving to stop somebody else, you are not driving 100% to the best finish of your team. Whether it's driver acting alone out of anger, I get that, I understand that, but you are not giving 100% for the best finish of your team then. Your goal is to not let somebody else move, whether it's for a playoff point, stage points, race win, advance to the next round, doesn't matter. You are not giving 100% for your team. The bigger problem, too, then, is if they say, okay, we got to be more consistent, where do you draw the line? And I know this is obsolete, but the biggest thing that got referenced is allowing a driver to lead a lap, back when we got points for leading a lap. But you think about it. When we have restarts where one driver will go to the outside, give second place the inside, and they fall in line, work together. Super speedway racing. You move up a lane to get match up with another driver, manufacturer, teammate, otherwise, to pick them up and make a charge to the front. Where do you draw the line of what is manipulating the final outcome of a race? And that's where teams, I mean, are essentially putting NASCAR in this position to make that kind of judgment call and have to do this. So they just need to not do it.
Yeah, I do agree with that, Jay, is that the teams are kind of putting NASCAR in this position of having to make a call. You guys have brought up some excellent examples that were no calls by NASCAR, and it is a head-scratcher as to why they drew the line in the sand at this particular point. My thing is, I wish there was a way that NASCAR could make these calls in the race, you know, because if they'd done that, then maybe they could have parked Cole Custer at that point done something. But again, that's kind of a mute point when you think about the consistency or inconsistency that we've seen over the years. Another example that I think of is, remember when Kyle Busch spun his truck to help out John Hunter Nemechek? A lot of people questioned that, and NASCAR made a no call. And at that point, what we were kind of hearing, the kind of the scuttlebutt was, you know, Kyle Busch never admitted it. He had no comment. He didn't comment on it. He never admitted that that's what he did. He kind of smiled, and we all kind of knew what that meant, but he did not admit it. That's where I think William Byron got into trouble with his penalty. He admitted it, and that's what got him into trouble. I think that's a mistake as well. I think if it's obvious enough that you can tell that they purposely did something to manipulate the race, I think NASCAR needs to make that call during the race and not wait two or three days in order to make that call. There's replays in football. Why can't there be replays and timeout for NASCAR to review it right then and there and make the call? I don't understand it. But inconsistency, I think, is one of the biggest issues. Andy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and part of it, too, I think in particular with the Custer incident is I'm not even sure you could really put a lot of the blame on the driver himself. I mean, sure, he was driving the car, but, I mean, you know, having heard the audio that was played, you know, the crew chief kind of exclaimed, you know, rather loudly that, you know, check up, you got a flat tire. And that, for all we know, that startled Cole and he let off the gas. You know, certainly, I think if someone were yelling at me in my ear, you know, I'd probably be startled by that. And, you know, I'd be curious to know, and I haven't heard, as if they were giving him detailed information on that last lap about where the 14 was or not. That I have not heard. But nonetheless, you know, in Cole's case, you know, with someone yelling at you to check up, you get a flat tire, you probably would maybe check up momentarily and feel it out and see if what they're saying is true or not, you know. So I don't even know that I really put the blame on Custer in this case, you know. So I hate to see the penalty against him personally, you know. But at the end of the day, it's unfortunate that this is the big news of the week, you know. We just finished up the round of 12, you know. We start the new round of 8 this weekend, and, you know, you would want the storyline to be about, you know, the round opener in Las Vegas this weekend. And kind of unfortunate that we're talking about a massive penalty like this, but hopefully, you know, we don't see this the rest of the playoffs. And you also hope that, you know, teams maybe learn from this and see the example that was set here with this penalty. And you hope that maybe people will refrain from doing such things moving forward.
One can only hope. Okay, Tommy, what do you have for us?
Okay, let's go with the Kyler Reddick. There's an announcement this weekend about 23XI, I believe, and Kurt Busch. And there's rumors that Tyler Reddick has been bought out from RCR and will join 23XI next year.
Okay. Jay? Your thoughts?
Well, the way Tommy said it there, I think it's a little backwards. It's the rumor is that Reddick has been bought out and will be moving over. We don't know Kurt Busch's status. We're assuming a lot with that. I hadn't seen anything yet, though, as far as Kurt Busch's status. 2311 buying out Reddick, unless they're the ones that got a third charter and are going to go to three teams at least for a year or two, maybe long-term, really didn't make sense. The only conclusion is that maybe Kurt Busch might not be ready to come back or come back at all, which is very unfortunate. We kind of thought that would happen, even though RCR kept saying he was the one that had a third charter and was going to keep him for a third year. And, you know, that might have been a revenge tactic of that, of, hey, I have to let you go in 2024, but I can keep you here next year. But it'd also be at a cost, as we mentioned, for a third charter or running the team without a charter, whatever they opted to do with him at RCR. So it doesn't surprise me. The only concern I have then is the fact that they are now doing this. I don't get a good feeling about Kurt Busch's future that I feel like he may end up retiring due to this concussion situation.
Okay, Andy?
Yeah, this is an interesting development for sure. From a financial standpoint, from Richard Childress Racing, it makes perfect business sense. You know, they would have to invest millions in obtaining a charter to start a third car. You know, so instead of doing that, presumably, you know, they made money by Reddick's contract being bought out. So it makes sense for that to happen. And it also makes sense for Tyler to begin his tenure at 2311, where he'll be probably for the long term. But like Jay said, it makes me pretty concerned about Kurt Busch's future. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he might even have a press conference set up for this weekend at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, which further ties into all this, I think. So if this is how Kurt Busch goes out, it's really disheartening. I think that given his success and his long tenure in the sport, you know, it would be nice to see him have a full retirement season. But obviously his health is paramount and must be number one, and maybe he just can't come back. And if that's the case, I think that would be understandable, given, you know, this head injury that he's been dealing with. So we'll see what happens with that. But obviously an interesting development in all this. You know, so we'll see what happens with the Kurt Busch press conference this weekend. But certainly would really hated if this is the way that he has to end his career.
Yes, indeed. This started with a post by Lee Spencer saying that she's hearing that Tyler Reddick's contract has been bought out from RCR Racing, and he will join 2311 Racing next year. An announcement is expected this weekend at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. That ties into the announcement that you just referenced, Andy, with Kurt Busch scheduled to make an announcement this week as well. So if you think about it, a lot is kind of on hold until Kurt Busch does make an announcement about whether he's coming back or whether he's going to be retired. Or what's going on. Okay, I'm going to have to make an announcement myself here for just a few minutes. For our first-time listeners, we always let you know that we are going off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, but we are going to continue our conversation, and that will be recorded as part of our bonus overtime material that's available on our podcast. I'll go out on Twitter and Facebook as soon as we finish up here to let you know that the podcast is available. And at that point, you can go to our player at fanforracing.com and just fast forward to that two-hour mark to hear the rest of the conversation. Again, we don't want anybody to be caught off guard, which is why we make the announcement. I think to get back to our topic here, I do think that a lot is pending based on the announcement by Kurt Busch, and I don't think it's any coincidence that Lee Spencer is saying this about Tyler Reddick going into the same weekend at the same track where Kurt Busch is expected to make an announcement. So I think all of that's going to be tied in together, and we don't necessarily like to see a driver go out, and, you know, based on an injury, I think his health is most important, and it kind of reminds you of Dale Jr. when Dale Jr. made the decision not to race anymore because of his situation, very similar to what happened to Kurt Busch. So we'll see what happens this weekend out at Las Vegas, but it sounds like there's going to be some announcements, and we'll know more then. Tommy?
I actually saw on Twitter today where if Kurt Busch does retire next year, that he is the last active driver to have raced with Dale Earnhardt. So kind of crazy. But, I hope that – so he does have an announcement at Vegas this weekend, and I'm really hoping it's not, hey, I'm retiring, because I really want to see him at least do one more year and, do one more year and then retire, at least not cut a season short and have to end your career due to a concussion. But, I mean, that's his decision, and, if that's what the doctor's telling him to do, then he definitely should do it, because, you know, head trauma in NASCAR and the NFL, it's common in boxing
mm-hmm.
and stuff. So these guys are starting to smarten up and retire, and, you know, that's probably a good thing. So if that's his decision. But to be honest, I'm also kind of not surprised. I was already thinking when Kyle Busch was told that, you know, I'm going to RCR, and Richard Childress said he was, you know, upset with with Tyler Reddick, but, you know, Tyler Reddick was still going to compete for a championship this year. I was already thinking, I was like, why don't they just go ahead and get rid of him now instead of making him go there in 2024? And then that's actually kind of sounds like what's about to happen if his contract was just bought out. So, but if Kurt doesn't retire, then they got to find somewhere to put him if they're going to do a third car. But, yeah, apparently, like Jay was saying, there is another charter that's been bought, I believe, but we don't know who has that charter yet. So that'll be interesting to see.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up?
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize that it had been announced that Kurt Busch has a separate announcement to make, which all just kind of the pieces leading together does not look good for his future. And we've all said it, and no matter what the sport, I know other sports have had it where a player, driver, whatever it be, doesn't really have the option to retire on their terms, and that's unfortunate. You know, with Kurt Busch, and I think even, you know, in this case it's a health injury, but I think back to Matt Kenseth, who kind of got pushed out the door,
mm-hmm.
not by his choosing, not necessarily in his prime, but still capable of winning and contending in races and championships. So just hate to see that it's not when a driver wants to. You know, we talk about Jimmy Johnson walking away when he chose to, when he wanted to, and that's what you like to see. So we'll have to wait and see what Kurt Busch's announcement is, how this all plays out and gets confirmed. A lot of moving pieces. I think we've said this before, but it seems to be this is a fairly big, silly season all the way around. And I know Spire Motorsports has an announcement coming yet. There's some things going on. These charters, obviously always a big topic. So see what happens and gets announced there at Las Vegas. And I guess we'll talk about it next week and just wish the best for Kurt Busch.
Okay, Andy?
Yeah, really not a whole lot to follow up here on. You know, interested to see how this does come to fruition. I'm sure that we'll know more after any announcements and certainly after Kurt's press conference this weekend. So be curious to see what they wind up announcing.
Yes, indeed. I mean, it would be really cool if Kurt's coming back to announce that he's going to be able to race again before the season is over. I suppose that still is an option, but, you know, maybe Tyler Reddick says he's going to join 2311, so that would be a third car if Kurt does come back. But I think it's more likely to be what we've already outlined here. That he's going to announce a retirement and Tyler Reddick will be taking that spot with 2311. I don't really have a lot to add here, so I'm going to pass it on to Tommy. Tommy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't really have much more to add to it either. Just was going to say that I really hope that it's not a retirement speech, but I mean, being that Vegas is his home track and Kyle Busch too, you know, it just seems like the stars are kind of aligning that way, that it's going to be a retirement speech. But, you know, either way, it sounds like Tyler Reddick's going to get bought out. So even if Kurt Busch doesn't retire, it sounds like Tyler Reddick's going to be a 23X sign next year, which I already thought was going to happen because, like I said, I saw RCR's comments, like Richard Childress's, months ago when he first heard about Tyler Reddick, how upset he was. So not really surprised to hear it. But I just hope that it's not a retirement speech, but sounds like that's what it's going to be.
Okay. Jay, you get to bring up our next hot topic.
Well, we got several good ones listed. I think some of them kind of fall under this one. So I'm going to start with there's a Bob Pockrass tweet. It says Steve Phelps, speaking at the SBJ World Congress of Sports, says the 2024 schedule will be the most aggressive when it comes to schedule variation. He wouldn't give details. Obviously, the 2024 schedule is not yet set, but that it'd be the most aggressive when it comes to schedule variation.
Okay. Andy, your thoughts about it? I know it seems like it's so premature because it's going to be a while before we see a 2024 schedule. But what are your thoughts about what they're saying about the aggressiveness of this one?
Well, I mean, I think change is good sometimes, you know, and I like what we've seen, you know, in schedule changes the past couple of years. Obviously, we had predominantly the same schedule for almost 20 years, and NASCAR, and I applaud them for this, has been aggressive with making some changes, you know, listening to the fans. You know, for the longest time, everyone wanted short tracks and road courses, and they have made some of those changes. And, you know, I think that they've made some positive changes with the schedule, you know, whether it be the L.A. Coliseum or, you know, Circuit of the Americas, some of these road courses they've made, North Wilkesboro making a return for the All-Star race, that's a big deal for next year. So they've been aggressive in making, you know, more changes than we've seen recently. And so it excites me that they are considering a sizable revamp for 2024. You know, I'd be curious to see what that entails. You know, I think that, you know, maybe we start to see a situation where, you know, tracks, you know, rotate in and off the schedule. You know, maybe that means that, you know, just because we raced at a certain track this year doesn't mean we'll do it the following year, but maybe that means that it makes a return at some point. So I don't know. I think that, you know, if you make significant changes, it keeps things interesting. It keeps it fun. And I think that, you know, keeping it, you know, changing, you know, frequently and keeping it diverse is what makes the Cup Series one of the most diverse forms of motorsports in the world. So I'd be welcome, you know, it'd be a welcome change, you know, to see the schedule revamped, you know. And I'm sure there'll be some, you know, races that remain. Obviously, the Daytona 500 is probably not going anywhere. You know, Coke 600, Southern 500, tracks like that, races like that, certainly the marquee events, I think will always have a place on the Cup Series schedule. But it would be interesting to see new markets, new ideas come to fruition. I think there's a lot of, you know, I think, trying to look for the right word here, there's a lot of, you know, excitement building around that street course in Chicago for next year. And I'd have to think that if that is successful and does well, that maybe that's an idea for down the road. Maybe we start to see, you know, occasional street courses come and go in various parts of the United States and maybe even outside of the country. So I think there's a lot to be excited about when they make a comment about the 2024 schedule, you know, maybe being one of the most sizable changes we've seen in recent years. I'd be all for it.
Yeah, we kind of had a discussion about this, I think it was on Monday, about the amount of change that everybody's dealing with within NASCAR. But I think that's been the case for a long time now. Change is just part of the norm within NASCAR. But I do think making this announcement now, well in advance of the 2024 schedule, give some of these teams and drivers a chance to kind of get used to the idea that there's going to be a shakeup in this schedule for that 2024 season. So I kind of see this as a strategy play by NASCAR in order to prep the teams and the drivers and everybody that's involved, the fans, include them in on that, to kind of prepare all of us for those changes. NASCAR is becoming a very out-of-the-box thinker. And, if, you know, I think about with the COVID, NASCAR kind of led the way for all sports on how to come back from the COVID outbreak and keep your sport going, even with that COVID break. They kind of blazed the trail for other motorsports to do the same. And I applaud them for being the trailblazers that they are. I thought that it was a big success to go to the Coliseum. I know they're going to do that again in 2023. I'm guessing that it's going to be a big announcement for where that's going to be in 2024. But what we're hearing is that it's going to be new venues. It's going to be, you know, different types of things similar to the street course race that we were talking about at Chicagoland Speed, not at Chicagoland, but on the Chicago street race. Sometimes I think this is just mainly a strategy play for NASCAR to prepare everybody for more change that's coming down the pike. And I think it's a good move on their part. And Tommy, I skipped you. I apologize. What are your thoughts?
So I saw that tweet as well about how the 2024 schedules will be aggressive. And I also saw the other day where if the other city that they're eyeballing besides Chicago to do the street course race is New York. So that was the only new venue that I heard of or saw of on Twitter. But like you said, they're going to bring back the Coliseum next year. Atlanta's going to be a night race next year, which those are two, you know, I'm excited for that Atlanta night race. I think that's going to be awesome. Because now that's a super speedway, so it's basically another super speedway race at night to go along with the Daytona one, of course. And I feel like usually now the Daytona 500 is in a night race. But so like Andy said, they're not going to get rid of some races and tracks. Like Daytona 500 is going to stay. The Coca-Cola 600 is going to stay. And there's some other races. Yeah, Darlington's going to stay. They're not going to get rid of that. They're not going to get rid of Bristol or Martinsville. They're not going to get rid of Talladega for sure. So those races would stay, in my opinion. The rest of the tracks would be maybe a toss-up. But I would just be excited to see what else they're going to do besides the Chicago street course and New York street course if they, you know, do that, of course. But, hey, North Wilkesboro is back next year for the All-Star race, so – are they going to do some revivals? I saw where they're going to repave Rockingham. I mean, you know, does this mean more racing? Because we've already got 36 races a year. Does it mean the Xfinity and Truck Series are going to be going to a bunch of different tracks? But either way, we got to wait a while till we got to wait till probably next year, 2023, like in the towards the end of summer, beginning of fall for that schedule. So we got some time to think about it even longer.
Okay, Jay.
Well, I thought I was going to get in there without anybody hitting on it, but Tommy kind of did there with the Rockingham repave was one of them. The one thing I want to say to start this, Sharon, you mentioned it, the thinking outside the box. I like that. However, there's something to be said for stability as well. I don't want to see changes being made just to make changes, which I'm not saying NASCAR is doing, but that's kind of been the highlight as of recent of NASCAR is changing things every year, that they go too overboard with it. And as I said earlier, Mike kind of got in my head. When we talk about doing different things like the Coliseum, the dirt race, the Rovals now, a street course, I also don't want to see it become too gimmicky of, you know, from that aspect of too many things that are outside of normal oval track racing, because again, that is what your foundation is. So I think they do need to be careful with that. Watching Race Hub, and I believe this was Tuesday's, as far back as Tuesday's show maybe, when they talked about this, some of the things that I know have been mentioned is, again, the overseas. I think specifically Monaco was the one that got talked about with Bobby Labonte and Larry McReynolds. Weekday races at some of these, and that's where I think maybe a track like Rockingham or North Wilkesboro might come into play, because those are close to home for most of the teams and could be done fairly easy during the week. Which case then, Tommy mentioned, you know, the length of the schedule. That's something drivers have actually talked about, of maybe shortening up the schedule or getting more off weekends. So if you do something like that of a weekday race and then a race on that weekend, you could pull a weekend and open it up for an off weekend. Same thing with what they did at Pocono when they had two races at the same venue in a weekend. I thought that was kind of a good idea, and they played around with how they did it. So there are some things I like that they are looking at and checking out. And, you know, new markets, I'm always in favor of that. I know sometimes I get frustrated some of the markets that they go to or tracks that get left off, stings a little bit. But if you're opening up new markets and trying new things, it also brings new in. So, and I'm sure they are. Obviously, they're looking at 2024. Obviously, they are thinking ahead long term. Like I said, I just don't want to see them get too aggressive with it where it's too much and there's no stability either.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, you know, I think to follow up, I feel, you know, excited about what changes may take place down the road. You know, I like the idea of maybe rotating street courses. I don't necessarily want to see an abundance of them, but it would be cool to see, you know, different markets get maybe different races every so often. I think that would be exciting. I think that it would be cool to see the series branch out some. You know, certainly I recall when NASCAR raced down in Mexico as well as Canada, I thought those were good races, and, you know, maybe we see somewhat of a return of that as time goes on. So, and then I think, you know, they really hit on something this year with the LA Coliseum essentially building a temporary racetrack inside of a stadium. You know, maybe that's a concept that we see built upon or branched out as time goes on. So, I don't know. I think there's a lot to be excited about here. You know, I think given the fact that we've gone to the same racetracks over and over again for all these years, it's fun to see some outside-the-box thinking, and it's fun to see new ideas and new concepts come to fruition. And I think that it would be nice to see underserved markets get the opportunity to host NASCAR events, specifically the Upper Midwest and the Pacific Northwest, which doesn't have anything as far as NASCAR goes. I guess, you know, Wisconsin had Road America, which, you know, certainly sad to see that go. But, you know, in lieu of that, I think it's going to be fun to see the Chicago Street Course. And, you know, so it would be cool to see, you know, that area of the country, you know, maybe get the chance to host racing at some point down the road. So these are all positive changes, and I think that, you know, a big schedule shakeup is a good thing for sure.
Okay, Tommy.
Yeah, I'm just interested to see how it's all going to shake out too. The weekday races and all that stuff sounds interesting, you know, with Rockingham and North Willsboro being close and, you know, shortening the season because, you know, the NFL's tough to compete with in college football. So maybe they pack it all in from February to like September or something. But I'm just curious to see what the new tracks are going to be and which ones are going to get the boot. That's what I'm interested in. And I did hear something about, I always think of the 90s when they went to those two tracks in Japan. I mean, I've always saw it on YouTube, of course, but I do know they went to Japan and they raced. And, you know, that would be pretty cool for them to go to Europe somewhere and do a race, whether it be a street course or if there's a track out there they can do it at. I mean, that would be really cool. The logistics are probably going to be the interesting part there, but that would still be awesome. You know how you have to get up for London football games at like 8 or 9 in the morning to watch them. I wonder if you're going to have to get up at 8 or 9 o'clock on a Sunday to watch a race, but I mean, that's fine with me.
Okay. You guys have all brought up some really good points. I guess the only other thing I can add is that with the aggressive changes that they're talking about, and maybe even including the street course race, They're all really exciting. A lot of people are looking forward to it. But in all of these changes that NASCAR is making, there are going to be some things that work out really, really well, like the LA Coliseum, but there are going to be some things that don't work out well. So I would just kind of forewarn people to not expect everything to go perfect with aggressive changes that are coming in NASCAR. I would think that there's going to be something that maybe fans aren't too excited about when they hear what that schedule is, or maybe they're really excited about. But I know a lot of people were skeptical about the LA Coliseum, and it turned out to be a pretty good thing, and a lot of people enjoyed that. But I think that we can expect that I love the out-of-the-box thinking, but I think we can expect that not everything's going to go real well. I think that there are going to be some things that maybe don't go so well, that it's not a thing to be unhappy about necessarily, but a learning curve for NASCAR as they go through making some of these aggressive changes of what to do and what not to do when they're thinking about some of these changes. That's the only other thing that I think I can add. You guys have all made some great points. Jay, you get to wind it up.
Yeah, I'd follow up on what you said there. Certain ones would take time to develop, whether they're in the same location or not. I know we're returning to the L.A. Coliseum, but that is one then of, again, coliseums or bigger arenas around the country, this country and others, because that's one that's been kicked around as far as overseas. I know, Sharon, you've mentioned a couple of times when they race back at Soldier Field. So that might be one. The road course one, I think, is the street course. Make sure I use the right words. Street course one is an interesting one. If they were to say we're going to do one street course per year, this year it happens to be in Chicago. Next year maybe it is in New York, or that is one maybe could be done in the upper Midwest, Northwest and Midwest, like Andy mentioned. That is one that could be in that they got to build the track anyway. I don't know how much, like at the LA Coliseum, how much money they save by returning and doing it in the same location each and every year. The second thing would be what you mentioned, Sharon, of even if it is a permanent thing, of give it time to develop and then improve on it, specifically the Bristol Dirt Race. Heavier cars, the weather, so many things can vary with that. I think we've showed great improvement of how the Cup cars do on dirt over the 3 years. First year, I wouldn't call it a disaster, but it wasn't great either. I think we've seen improvement each of the years they've been back. So you're right. There are certain things that way you got to give it time to develop. And again, there's so many other possibilities. I've always been one of, I think the midweek racing could be a big thing. I know logistics, Tommy mentioned that. I know when we're talking about going back to Japan, the logistics of that, of the teams travel, that's why it was an exhibition outside of the regular season, getting the cars over there, and then of time differential for it to be marketable for those in the stateside, certainly is something to be worked upon. But I do remember that of teams talking about that. Even Canada and Mexico were a little bit, not quite as much so, but that the cars going over to Japan had to be crated over, so teams had to have those ready, and the cost of it certainly could become a factor. So we'll have to wait and see. Like I said, I'm intrigued by it. I just don't want to see them go too overboard. And as I said, the change just for the sake of change. Make sure there's a full thought process. And like I said, clearly they are thinking long-term because this is 2024 we're talking about.
Exactly. Okay. We are coming up to the top of the hour, so let's go ahead and do our roundtable. And Tommy, we'll start with you.
I'm at Cincinnati Fast Fan on Twitter. Give me a follow. You can take a look at my diecast. Got a couple good ones to come for this month. Bunch of number 10 Johnny Benson, John Lee Benson paint schemes.
Cool. Okay, Andy?
CB14 fan on Twitter, and as always, good to be on tonight, and looking forward to some racing in Vegas this weekend. Hopefully it's good.
Okay, and Jay?
You can follow me, Michael Hoosman, on Facebook, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And Mike's not here to help me out, but because it's got to be a little different anyway, so I'm going to go off a couple things we talked with Sharon about. I won't be in a hotel this weekend because I'm going to be 2 minutes from my house, and that'll be at the baddest bullring in the South, Columbus Speedway. So bullring in Vegas and bullring right here in Columbus.
There you go. And I am Fan for Racing Sites on Twitter and Fan for Racing Blog and Radio everywhere else, including our website, fanforracing.com, where we have our radio player for Fan for Racing Radio. Big shout-out to our listeners for tuning in. We do appreciate it, and we hope you enjoy listening as much as we enjoy doing this. We always have a good time here with our Fan for Racing crew. And a big shout-out to the Fan for Racing crew as well. And tonight that would be Jay Huseman, Andy Lasky, and Tommy Kraft. Thank you guys for all that you contribute. And we will look forward to the weekend of racing this weekend and returning back on Monday to review all of it. So take care and enjoy your race weekend, guys.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. I don't know. I don't know. But I think you might become more comfortable in the bed. Yeah, I was just thinking I'm going to set mine too here.